Chapter 15. Room 48 was in commotion. The egghead and two other SCOP players stood arrayed for active service. They had been classified 1A and were going out with a transport to the front. The egghead was pale. He was staring at Reuter.
You with your miserable foot, you shirker! You're staying here and I, the father of a family, have to go!
Reuter made no reply. Feltman straightened up in bed.
Shut your trap, egghead, he said. You do not have to go because he is staying here. You have to go because you're 1A. If he were 1A and had to go, then you'd have to go just the same. So don't talk nonsense.
I'll say what I like,
screamed the egghead furiously.
I have to go and I'll say what I like. You're staying here. You're sitting around here eating and sleeping and we have to go. I, the father of a family, and that fat lead swinger there swills schnapps so that his damned foot won't heal.
Wouldn't you do the same thing if you could? Reuter asked.
I? Not I. I've never shirked in my life.
Well, then everything's in order. Why are you still complaining?
What?
Asked the egghead, taken aback. You're proud of never having shirked. All right, go on being proud and don't complain anymore.
What? What kind of damn twist is that? That's all you know, isn't it, you pig? Twist the words in a man's mouth. They'll catch you yet. They'll catch you even if I have to report you myself.
Do not commit a sin, said one of the two SCOP players who were also 1A. Come, we've got to go down. Move out.
I'm not committing a sin. Those are the sinners there. It's an outrage that I, the father of a family, have to go to the front in place of this drunken hog. I only want justice.
Oh, man, justice? Where can you find that in the army?
Come, we've got to get going.
He won't report anyone, comrades. That's just the way he talks. Farewell. Take care of yourselves. Hold the position.
The two SCOP players dragged the frantic egghead off with them. White and sweating, he jerked around once more in the doorway and was about to shout something when they pushed him out.
That babbling fool, Feltman said to Reuter. Puts on a show like an actor. Do you still remember the row he made because I was sleeping away my leave?
He was losing, Rommel said suddenly. Up to now, he had been sitting at the table without taking part. He was way behind the game. 23 marks, that's no small matter. I should have given it back to him.
You can still do it. The transport hasn't left.
What?
He's still outside. Go down and give it back to him if your conscience is bothering you.
Rommel got up and went out.
He's gone crazy too, Feltman said. What's the egghead going to do with those shekels at the front?
He can gamble them away again. Graber went to the window and looked out. The contingent was gathering below.
Children and old men, Reuter said. Since Stalingrad, they take everyone.
Yes. The contingent formed up.
What's happened to Rommel?
Feltman asked in sudden astonishment.
Why, he's talking now.
He began while you were asleep. Feltman came to the window in his undershirt.
There stands the egghead, he said. Now he has a chance to find out for himself whether it's better to sleep and dream of the front, or to be at the front and dream of home.
We'll all be able to find that out before long, Reuter announced. Next time my staff surgeon is going to put me down as 1A2. He's a man of spirit and has explained to me that true Germans don't need legs for running. They can fight just as well sitting down. From outside came the sound of commands. The contingent marched off. Graber saw it as though through the wrong end of a telescope. The receding soldiers were like live dolls with toy guns.
Poor egghead, Reuter said. He wasn't mad at me. He was mad at his wife. He thinks she's going to be unfaithful to him when he's gone. And he's furious because she gets his marriage allowance. He suspects she's going to use it to carry on with her lover.
Marriage allowance? Is there such a thing? Graber asked.
But man, where have you been?
Feltman shook his head.
200 marks a month is what a woman gets. That's real money. Lots of people have married for that. Why should one make a present of it to the state?
Reuter turned away from the window.
Your friend Bending was here asking for you, he said to Graber.
What did he want? Did he leave a message?
He's having a little celebration at his house. He wants you to come.
Was that all?
That was all. Rummel came in.
Did you catch the egghead?
Feltmont asked. Rummel nodded. His face was working.
At least he still has a wife,
he burst out with sudden emotion.
But to have to go out again having nothing anymore.
He turned away abruptly and threw himself on his bed. They all pretended they had not heard.
If the egghead had only been here to see that, Feltmann whispered. He made a big bet that Rummel would break down today.
Leave him alone, Reuter said angrily. Who knows when you're going to break down yourself? No one's safe, not even a sleepwalker. He turned to Graber.
How long do you still have?
11 days.
11 days? That's a pretty long time.
Yesterday it was still a long time, Graber said. Today it's damn short.
No one is here, Elizabeth said. Neither Frau Lisa nor her child. The place is ours.
Thank God. I believe I'd have killed her if she had said so much as a word tonight. Did you have another fight with her yesterday?
Elizabeth laughed.
She considers me a prostitute.
Why? After all, we were only here for an hour yesterday evening.
It was the day before. You were here the whole evening then.
But we covered the keyhole and played the phonograph the whole time. How does she get such ideas?
Yes, how?
Elizabeth said, brushing him with a quick glance.
Graber looked at her. A sudden warmth rose in his forehead.
Where were my eyes that first evening? He thought.
What's become of the she-devil? He asked.
She's gone out to the villages with her child, collecting contributions for some winter or summer benefit. She's not coming back till tomorrow night. We have tonight and the whole day tomorrow all for ourselves.
The whole day tomorrow? Don't you have to go to your factory?
Elizabeth laughed.
Not tomorrow. Tomorrow is Sunday. For the time being, we still have Sundays off.
Sunday, Graber said.
What luck, I had no idea of it. So I'll finally be able to see you in the daytime. Up to now, it has always been evening or night.
Has it?
Yes. We went out for the first time Monday with a bottle of Armagnac.
That's true,
Elizabeth said in surprise.
I haven't seen you in the daytime either.
She was silent for a moment, looking at him, and then she glanced away.
We lead a rather hectic life, don't we?
There's nothing else for us to do.
That's true, too. How will it be when we face each other tomorrow in the harsh light of noon?
We'll leave that to divine providence.
But what shall we do tonight?
Shall we go to the same restaurant as yesterday? It was no damn good.
What we need is the Germania.
Too bad it's closed.
We can stay here. There's still enough to drink. I could try to cook something.
Can you stand it here? Wouldn't you rather go out?
Whenever Frau Leeser isn't here, it's like a vacation.
Then let's stay here. Let's have an evening without music. It will be marvelous. And I won't have to go back to the barracks.
But what about food? Can you really cook? You don't look as if you could.
I can try. Besides, there's not much here. Only what you can get for coupons.
That can't be much.
They went into the kitchen. Graber looked at Elizabeth's provisions. There was hardly anything there. A little bread, some artificial honey, margarine, 2 eggs, and a few withered apples.
I still have ration coupons, she said. We can go out and get something. I know a store that's open in the evenings.
Graber shut the drawer.
Keep your coupons. You'll need them for yourself. Today we'll have to use other methods of procurement. We'll have to organize.
We can't steal anything here, Ernst,
Elizabeth said in alarm.
Frau Leeser knows every crust that belongs to her.
I can well imagine. Besides, I'm not going to steal today. I'm going out to requisition like a soldier in enemy country. A certain Alphonse Binding invited me to a little party. I'll go there and get what I would have eaten if I'd taken part in the celebration, and I'll bring it here. He has a house with enormous supplies. I'll be back in half an hour. Alphonse received him red-faced and open-armed.
There you are, Ernst! Come in! Today is my birthday! I have a few friends here.
The hunting room was full of smoke and people. Listen to me, Alphonse, Graeber said quickly in the corridor. I can't stay. I only dropped in for a minute, and I have to go right back.
Go back? But Ernst, that's entirely out of the question.
I have to. I'd made an appointment before I heard you had asked for me.
That doesn't matter. Tell the people you have to go to an unexpected official meeting or to a hearing.
Alphonse laughed boisterously.
There are two Gestapo officers sitting inside. I'll introduce you to them at once. Tell your friends you had to go to the Gestapo. Then you won't even be lying. Or bring them over if they're nice.
That's impossible.
Why? Why is it impossible? Everything goes with us.
Graeber saw that the simplest thing was to tell the truth. You should be able to imagine, Alphonse, he said. I didn't know you were celebrating your birthday. I came by to get something to eat and drink from you. I'm going to meet someone I can't possibly bring here. I'd be a fine fool if I did. Now do you understand? Bending grinned.
I've got it,
he announced.
The eternal feminine. At last, I was beginning to give up hope for you.
I understand, Ernst. You're excused. However, we have a couple of fancy dames here. Won't you at least take a look at them? Irma is a damned enterprising woman. The blonde over there with the high heels, a hot number, a warden in the women's concentration camp. And with Gudrun, you can unquestionably go to bed tonight. She's always available for frontline soldiers. The smell of the trenches excites her. It doesn't excite me, Alphonse laughed.
Nor the concentration camp smell around Irma, eh?
It gives Stegemann wings. That fat fellow on the sofa? Not my taste. I'm normal and all for coziness. You see that little trick in the corner? How do you like her?
First class. You want her? I'll give her up to you if you'll stay, Ernst.
Graeber shook his head. It can't be done.
I understand. It must be someone really high class you've picked up. You don't need to be embarrassed, Ernst.
Alphonse is a cavalier himself. Let's go into the kitchen and find something for you, and later you'll drink a glass to my birthday. Agreed?
Agreed.
Frau Kleinert was standing in the kitchen in a white apron.
We're having a cold buffet, Ernst, Binding said. Your good luck. Pick out whatever you like. Or better yet, Frau Kleinert, make up a nice package.
We two will go on down to the cellar. The cellar was well stocked.
Now you just let Alphonse attend to this, Binding said. You won't be sorry.
Here, to begin with, is a genuine turtle soup in cans. Just heat it up and eat it. Comes from France. Take two.
Graeber took the cans. Alphonse went on searching. Asparagus, Dutch, two cans. You can eat it cold or warm it up. No extensive cooking. And here's a Polish ham in a can, too. That's Czechoslovakia's contribution.
He climbed up on a little ladder.
A piece of Danish cheese and a can of butter. It all keeps. That's the advantage of canned goods. Here are some brandied peaches, too. Or does the lady prefer strawberries?
Graeber looked at the short legs standing in front of him in the highly polished boots. Behind them shimmered the rows of bottles and tins. He thought of Elisabeth's pathetic supplies. There'd be more nourishment in both, he said. Alphonse laughed.
You're right. At last you're the same old boy again. No point in being sad, Ernst. Things are bad enough without that. Grab what you can and let the priests worry about the rest. That's my watchword.
He got off the ladder and went to the other side of the cellar where the bottles lay.
Here we have a respectable selection of booty. Our enemies are great in their liquors. What will you have? Vodka? Armagnac? Here's Slivovitz, too, from Poland.
Graeber had not really intended to ask for liquor. The supply from the Germania still sufficed. But Binding was right. Booty was booty. Now we can ought to take it wherever one found it.
There's champagne here, too, Alphonse said. I don't like the stuff myself, but it's said to be marvelous for romance. I hope it helps you out tonight,
he laughed loudly.
Do you know what my favorite schnapps is?
Kummel, believe it or not. Old honest Kummel. Take a bottle along and think of Alphonse when you drink it.
He put the bottles under his arm and went into the kitchen.
Make up 2 packages, Frau Kleinert. One with the food and one with the bottles. Paper between the bottles so they don't break. And put in 1/4 pound of the good bean coffee, too. Will that do you, Ernst?
I just hope I can carry it all. Bending beamed.
Alphonse doesn't do things by halves. Not on his birthday, and certainly not for an old schoolmate.
He was standing in front of Graeber. His eyes gleamed and his red face glowed. He looked like a boy who has found a bird's nest. Graeber was moved by his kindliness, but then he reflected that Alphonse had looked exactly the same way when he was listening to Heine's stories of Russia. Bending winked at Graeber.
The coffee is for tomorrow morning. I hope you realize that's Sunday and don't go back to sleep in the barracks. And now come. I'll just introduce you to a couple of friends. Schmidt and Hoffmann of the Gestapo. You can never tell when that sort of acquaintance will be useful. Just for a minute or two. Drink a glass to my health. May everything stay just as it is here and now. The house and everything that goes with it.
Bending's eyes were moist.
We can't help it. We Germans are just helpless romantics. We can't leave that in the kitchen,
Elisabeth said, overwhelmed.
I must try to hide it. If Frau Leeser saw it, she'd immediately report me as a black marketeer.
Damn it. I hadn't thought of that. Can't she be bribed with some of the stuff we don't like ourselves?
Is there anything we don't like?
Graeber laughed. Nothing but your artificial honey, or the margarine, and we'll be able to use those too in 2 days.
She is incorruptible, Elisabeth said. She takes pride in living exclusively on her ration coupons.
Graeber reflected. We can eat up part of the stuff by tomorrow evening, he explained then. But we won't be able to manage it all. What can we do with the rest?
We'll hide it in my room, behind the clothes and books. I still have a trunk, too, that I can lock.
And if she comes snuffling around?
I lock my room every morning when I go out.
And if she has another key? Elisabeth looked up.
I hadn't thought of that. It's possible.
Graeber opened a bottle. We'll decide about it tomorrow afternoon. Just now, we'll eat as much as we can. Let's unpack the whole lot. We'll crowd the table with it as though it were a birthday spread, all together and all at once.
The tins, too?
The tins, too, for decoration. We don't need to open them yet. First, let's eat whatever won't keep. And let's put the bottles there as well. All our riches, which we have honorably won by theft and corruption.
The ones from the Germania, too?
Those, too. We earned them honestly by fear of death. They pushed the table into the middle of the room. Then they opened all the packages and uncorked the slivovitz, the cognac, and the kummel. They did not open the champagne. It had to be drunk once it was uncorked. The liquors could be corked again.
It looks magnificent, Elisabeth said. What are we celebrating?
Graeber handed her a glass.
We're celebrating everything at once. We haven't time anymore for a lot of separate celebrations, nor any time for distinctions. We're simply celebrating everything at once, no matter what it is, and principally that we are here, and that we have 2 days to ourselves.
He walked around the table and took Elisabeth in his arms. He felt her, and it was as if a second life opened in him, warmer, more colorful, and easier than his own, without boundaries and without past, wholly present and without any shadow of guilt. She leaned against him. The laden table gleamed like a feast in front of them.
Wasn't that a bit much for a single toast?
She asked. He shook his head. It was only long-winded. At bottom, it always comes down to the same thing, to be happy that we're still here. Elisabeth emptied her glass.
Sometimes I believe we would know quite well what to do with life if they'd only let us.
At the moment, we're not doing too badly, Graeber said. The windows were open. A house diagonally across the street had been hit by a bomb the night before, and the panes in Elisabeth's room had been broken. She had covered the frames with black air raid paper and hung thin, bright-colored curtains in front of them. They waved in the breezes, so the room looked less like a vault. They had no lights on.
thus they could leave the windows open. From time to time, they heard people going by in the street. A radio was playing somewhere. House doors slammed. Someone coughed. Shutters were closed.
The city is going to sleep, Elizabeth said. And I'm fairly drunk.
They were lying side by side on the bed. On the table stood the remnants of dinner and the bottles, except for the vodka and the cognac and the bottle of champagne. They had not cleared anything away. They were waiting till they got hungry again. They had drunk the vodka. The cognac was standing on the floor beside the bed, and from behind the bed came the sound of running water in the wash basin. The champagne was lying there cooling. Graeber placed his glass on a little table beside the bed. He was lying in the darkness, and it seemed to him that he was in a small town before the war. A fountain was splashing. A linden tree was humming with bees. Windows were being closed, and somewhere a man was playing a final tune on his fiddle before going to bed.
The moon will rise soon, Elizabeth said.
The moon will rise soon, he thought. The moon, tenderness, and simple creature happiness. They were there already. They were in the sleepy circling of his blood, in the stilled wishes of his mind, and in the slow breath that wafted through him like a weary wind. He thought of the afternoon with Polman. It was infinitely far away. Strange that hard on the heels of such clear hopelessness there could come so much violent feeling. But perhaps it was not strange at all. Perhaps it could not be otherwise. As long as one was full of questions, one was incapable of perceiving much else. Only when one no longer expected anything was one open to everything and without dread. A beam of light swept over the window. It disappeared, flickered back, and remained.
Is that the moon already? Graeber asked. It can't be. Moonlight is not so white.
They heard voices. Elizabeth got up and slipped on a pair of bedroom slippers. She went to the window and leaned out. She did not look for a cover or a dressing gown. She was beautiful and sure of it, and therefore without shyness.
It's a clean-up detail from the air defense, she said. They have a searchlight and shovels and pickaxes, and they're over by the house across the street. Do you think there are still people buried in the cellar?
Were they digging there during the day?
I don't know. I wasn't here.
Perhaps they only want to repair the electric cables.
Yes, perhaps.
Elizabeth came back.
Sometimes after an attack, I have wished that I might return here and find this house burned down. The house, the furniture, the clothes, and the memories, everything. Do you understand that?
Yes.
I don't mean the memories of my father, I mean the others. The fear, the despondency, the hatred. If the house were burned, that would be finished too, I thought, and I could begin all over again.
Graeber looked at her. The pale beam from outside fell on her shoulders. The dull sound of pickaxe blows and the scraping of the shovels came through the window. Just give me the bottle from the basin, he said.
The one from the Germania?
Yes. We'll drink it before it's blown up. And put the others from Bending in. Who knows when the next attack will come? These bottles with carbon dioxide in them explode from negative pressure. They're as dangerous in the house as hand grenades. Have we glasses?
Water glasses?
Water glasses are right for champagne. That's the way we drank it in Paris.
Were you in Paris?
Yes, at the beginning of the war. Elizabeth brought the glasses and crouched beside him. He opened the bottle carefully. The wine flooded into the glasses and foamed up.
How long were you in Paris?
She asked. A couple of weeks.
Did they hate you very much?
I don't know. Perhaps. I didn't see much of it. Of course, we didn't want to see it either. We still believed most of what we had been taught. We wanted to get the war over in a hurry and sit in the sun on the streets in front of the cafes, drinking the wines of a foreign country. We were very young.
Young? You say that as though it were many years ago.
That's the way it seems, too.
Aren't you young anymore now?
Yes, but in a different way. Elizabeth lifted her glass against the carbide light that trembled in the window. She shook it,
and watched the wine foam up. Graber saw her shoulders and the wave of her hair and her back and the line of her spine with the long, soft shadows. She did not need to think about beginning all over again, he thought. She had nothing to do with this room or her work or Frau Leeser when she was without clothes. She belonged to the quivering outside the window and to the restless night, to the blind excitement of the blood and to the odd estrangement afterward, to the hoarse cries and voices outside, and also even to the dead that were being dug out. But she did not belong to the accidental, to emptiness, and to senseless lostness, not any longer. She seemed to have thrown off a disguise, and to be following all at once and without reflection, laws that yesterday she had not known at all.
I wish I had been in Paris with you, she said. I wish we could go there now and there wasn't a war. Would they let us in?
Perhaps. We didn't destroy anything in Paris.
But in France?
Not so much as in the other countries. It went fast.
Perhaps you destroyed enough so that they will go on hating us for many years.
Yes, perhaps. One forgets a lot in a long war. Perhaps they do hate us.
I wish we could go to some other country. Some country where nothing has been destroyed.
There aren't many undamaged countries left, Graber said. Is there still something there to drink?
Yes, enough. Where else have you been?
In Africa.
In Africa, too? You have seen a lot.
Yes, Graber said, but not the way I once dreamed of seeing it. Elisabeth lifted the bottle from the floor and filled the glasses. Graber looked at her. Everything seemed a bit unreal, and it was not just because they had been drinking. Their words drifted back and forth in the twilight. They were without meaning, and the thing that had meaning was without words, and you couldn't talk about it. It was like the rise and fall of a nameless river, and the words were sails that tacked back and forth across it.
Were you other places, too?
Elisabeth asked.
Sails, Graber thought. Where had he seen sails on rivers?
In Holland, he said. That was at the very beginning. There were boats there that glided through the canals, and the canals were so flat and low that it was as though the boats were traveling over the land. They were soundless and had huge sails, and it was strange when they glided in the twilight through the countryside like gigantic white and blue and red butterflies.
Holland,
Elisabeth said.
Perhaps we can go there after the war. We could drink cocoa and eat white bread and all those different Dutch cheeses, and in the evening we could watch the boats.
Graber looked at her. Things to eat, he thought. In wartime, one's ideas of happiness were inseparably bound up with eating.
Or can't we go there anymore either?
She asked. I think not. We overran Holland and destroyed Rotterdam without warning. I have seen the ruins. There was hardly a single house left standing. 30,000 dead. I'm afraid they won't admit us there either, Elisabeth. She was silent for a time. Then she suddenly lifted her glass and threw it to the floor. It tinkled and broke.
We can no longer go anywhere, she cried. Why do we fool ourselves with dreams? Nowhere. We are captured and excluded and accursed.
Graber straightened up. Her eyes shone like gray transparent glass in the quivering, chalky light from outside. He bent over her and looked at the floor. The edges of the splinters glittered whitely there. We'll have to turn on the light and pick them up, he said. Otherwise, we'll step on them and cut our feet. Wait, I'll shut the window first. He climbed over the foot of the bed. Elisabeth turned the switch on and reached for a dressing gown. The electric light made her shy.
Don't look at me, she said. I don't know why I did it. Usually I'm not this way.
You are fine that way, and you are right. You don't belong here. So it's all right for you to do a little smashing once in a while.
I wish I knew where I do belong.
Graber laughed. I don't know either. In a circus, perhaps, or in a Baroque mansion, or surrounded by steel furniture, or in a tent.
Not here, in this white girl's room. And I thought that first evening you were helpless and in need of protection. I am, too. We all are. But we managed to get along anyway without protection or help.
He took a newspaper, laid it on the floor, and pushed the splinters into it with another one. In doing so, he saw the headlines. Further shortening of the lines. Heavy fighting around Orel. He wrapped the splinters in the paper and put it in the wastebasket. The warm light of the room suddenly seemed doubly warm. From outside, he heard the hammering and drilling of the search party. On the table stood Alphonse's gifts. Sometimes you could think of a lot of things all at once, he thought.
I'll just clear this up, Elizabeth said. All of a sudden, I can't look at it anymore.
Where will you put it?
In the kitchen. We'll have time before tomorrow evening to hide what's left.
By tomorrow evening, there won't be very much left.
But how will it be if Frau Leeser comes back earlier? Well, then she'll just come back earlier.
Graeber looked at her in astonishment.
I'm surprised myself how much I change every day, she said.
Not every day, every hour.
And you?
I too.
Is that good?
Yes.
And even if it isn't good, it doesn't make any difference either. Nothing makes any difference, is that it?
No. Elizabeth turned off the light.
Now we can open the vault again, she said.
Graeber opened the window. The wind came in at once. The curtains waved.
There's the moon,
Elizabeth said. The orb was rising, distended and red over the roofs opposite. It was like a monster with a glowing head eating its way into the street. Graeber took two water glasses and filled them halfway with cognac. He handed one to Elizabeth.
Let's drink this now, he said.
Wine is no good in the dark. The moon rose higher and became more peaceful and more golden. They lay for a time in silence. Elizabeth turned her head.
What are we really?
She asked.
Happy or unhappy?
Graeber reflected. We are both, and probably that's how it has to be today. Unmixed happiness in our times belongs only to cows, or not even to them anymore, perhaps only to stones. Elizabeth looked at Graeber.
That doesn't matter either, does it?
No.
Does anything matter?
Yes. Graeber looked into the cold, golden light that was slowly filling the room.
We are no longer dead, he said.
And we are not yet dead.